Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you're having a good week so far. Quick one before we get into the podcast, a little bit of promo time. Obviously, I have a new record out on Patrick Toppin's label called Trick. The record is called Let's Rave. Also got a few other records on there with Daddy Dino. And a couple of dope remixes from Amara and Meg Ward. Go check it out on Spotify, Beatport, Apple Music, and every other thing that you listen to music on. Also, that leads nicely into this episode or conversation or whatever you want to call it. On this show, we've got the one and only Patrick Toppin. Patrick doesn't really need much of an introduction, as if you are into music in house and techno, you probably have heard his music or seen him play or both. Patrick came up through the record label Hot Creations with some of the biggest records in house and techno, really. He then started his label called Trick and has been throwing some insane parties around the world. Patrick's one of the nicest guys in the industry. I've met him a couple of times and it's always been fleeting, like at gigs or in clubs, and never really been able to have a proper conversation with him. So it was an absolute honor to get him on the show and I hope you enjoy it. It's a really good conversation. So without further ado, Patrick Toppin. Patrick Toppin, how's it going, sir?
Hey, mate, you all right?
I'm really good, man. I'm really good. It's I can't believe it's December already. Like, where the fuck is this year gone? It's just wild.
I know, it's crazy. We're going to put a Christmas tree up tonight, man. Once we finish this, that's what we're doing.
I feel like everyone's like, okay, it's early, but let's just get the Christmas tree up because it will make us feel a little bit better about our lives right now.
I just want to make the most of Christmas, just milk it. Because to be honest, usually I kind of miss Christmas.
Yeah.
Because of gigging all the time and all that. And then by the time you come back from your last gig, just fucking knackered and you're just like a zombie. So like, I'm getting right amongst it, mate. Christmas film every night. It's going to be mint.
I think the thing for me is because I generally play in the States, and in December, like Christmas, December isn't like a party time in the States as much as it is in UK.
Oh, really?
And the UK is like, let's just fucking have it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then even on Boxing Day, like Americans don't celebrate Boxing Day. So it's just over here, I can imagine it's just nonstop and not having a single day for Christmas apart from Christmas Day, and you can't relax or anything. It must suck.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to Christmas. It's going to be a bit of a different Christmas this year, though, with the obviously everything that's going on. But I'm still looking forward to it. I mean, you know what? I'm like actually enjoying this year.
I was going to say, is it nice to have a break?
Yeah, like I am enjoying it. I don't want to say like I'm absolutely loved it. You know what I mean? I feel like I have to reel it in a little bit because people are being like, "What the fuck? Why is he so buzzing?" But I mean, I mean, I'm fortunate. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, everyone's going through stuff to do with this.
Yeah.
Suppose I'm in a privileged position where I can take this time to. I'm not under too much pressure, and I can enjoy certain things. You know, it has presented some opportunities to do some stuff I wouldn't have been able to, and so it hasn't been all bad for me, luckily.
No, I think it's totally fine to say that as well, right? It's like you've clearly worked hard for the last how many years that you've got yourself into a situation that you can just sit back and relax and kind of assess the situation and do what you need to do. And yeah, like I'm in the same position. I'm super lucky that we can have that. But at the end of the day, a lot of people have it worse off than us, which sucks. And I really hope for them that the world kind of comes back and is better for them. What have you enjoyed about it?
Yeah, totally. I appreciate that. It's obviously a really bittersweet thing. And obviously I'm not totally like in a bubble, not affected by it. I mean, like my mum and dad are vulnerable and my mum's not seeing anyone. She's been isolating and all that. We've had people who have had the illness and like that we know and stuff like that. And obviously everyone is taking a hit in certain ways, including me. Like there's been opportunities that have been and gone and stuff like that. But but I just want to really talk about the positives of it, really, because I mean, you could dwell on the negative side. So I'm quite a positive person, really. Yeah. And there's been so many good sides of it, such as just really enjoying my house has been one, because I've had this house now for like 4 years and I've never really been in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where are you now, by the way? Are you in Bristol?
I'm near Bristol. I'm in like Somerset. So I'm in the like countryside, which is honestly like, again, it's the same for you. I grew up around here, but I haven't been here for the last 6 years. Like I've spent probably in the last 6 years, I've probably spent like 5 months here. And it's kind of the similar situation to you, is like you bought a house and you just can't live in it because you're just never there. And I guess, does Hayley tour with you all the time?
Not all the time. She just comes to the exotic ones. she's had a fair share of raves now as well. So she's a bit more take it or leave it now on that side. She doesn't come everywhere. I have a tour manager now for Europe, and he comes to every gig in Europe, and then he's came with us to some, he came one South American tour, and he's been North America once with us. But usually Hayley will only really come if it is a longer tour, and it tends to be like North, South America, Asia, Australia. She likes to come on the long haul tours, and sometimes depending how the schedule works out, you can turn it into a bit of a holiday as well. If there's like a few days at the start of the tour, at the end, or between weekends, there might be a few days off. So she just usually comes to those ones.
That's cool, man. How is it like, because I'm single, how is it being married and being on tour? Because obviously you're like with somebody that you're like absolutely want to be with a lot of the time, if you know what I mean. Is it, do you struggle with it at all?
Well, we're lucky because she can come with us whenever she wants, because she works with me now. She's like my PA and she helps with the label. She used to manage the label, but now she does the label's social medias, and she's still my PA.
Yeah.
So she does so much for us organizing my life, and in terms of like the music. And, like,
she was going to do that anyway, man. When you got married, it was just game over. She was always going to organize. Did she like pick out your outfits and stuff? Now you got
no, not like that. She's doing like fucking like paperwork and shit like that. It's like organizational stuff. You know what I mean?
The shit that we hate doing. But
she does have an eye for fashion though, and she does always like give. She's my go-to person for like it. Is this outfit too far? Is it shit or whatever? She's amazing like that. Not just in terms of that, but in terms of like my career decisions and in terms of artistically as well. Because, yeah, we're married. She's like my best friend. She's a person who can be the most brutally honest with us.
Yeah.
So like she's not a yes man at all. So she plays a big part in a lot of my decisions of what I'm doing because she can say to us, Patrick, that's fucking shit, you know what I mean, like more than anyone else can. So it's been having her has actually helped me so many ways that I can't even say in terms of my career, but I think like some of them are in terms of being like a calming factor as well.
Yeah,
like, you know what I mean, because we've been married now for 3 years, but we've been together for 13 years.
Yeah.
So we've been together since before any of this. You know what I mean? Like, we've been together since, like, when my career took off in 2013, and we had already been together for like 5 years before that.
Yeah.
So that type of thing as well of having a lass at that time, she wasn't my wife then, but she's my partner, a serious relationship for 5 years before it even started. So that kind of reeled in the party inside a bit. Yeah. I mean, I did party a fucking lot, you know what I mean? But I don't anymore. But even when I was, it could have been a lot more had I been single, because I would have been out there like searching for a partner, you know what I mean? And hanging out there a lot more. And I think that has kept me focused, and it's definitely got us further than I think I would have been wasting more time in parties and stuff like that.
I think there is a huge part of that, isn't there? Is when you're comfortable, when you're with somebody and you're super happy in that relationship, you don't need to search, because there's never going to be anyone better. And I think that's the beautiful thing. You don't see it nowadays that much. And that's kind of why I brought it up, because I love seeing the relationship that you guys have on social media and in life. It's just like when I saw you guys in America, it's just like so nice to see, because you don't see it often. There's like in our industry, it's like you just don't see it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, a lot of DJs, have partners, boyfriends, girlfriends, and that's kind of like a separate life to them.
Yeah, I've seen there's some people like that, and they don't get them involved.
Which
is their prerogative, and everyone has their own ways of dealing with stuff. But me and Hayley, she's always been involved, and then now she is professionally being involved, like working for us as well. That's took her to like a whole new level, and I think with some DJs talk about being on the road can be lonely, which I can appreciate, but having her there to come away with us for these tours and stuff, that's kind of just took that out of the equation for me. I'm so lucky with that.
I feel that, man. I feel that. It's cool. It's really nice to see.
Cheers.
Trick, how did that come about?
Yeah, well, that's been something I've wanted to do for ages. For so long, really. But I was releasing all my music with Hot Creations when I first came through, and that was an amazing platform for me. But I felt like my music started to develop in different directions that didn't, a lot of it didn't work with what Hot Creations were putting out. Like, I mean, Jamie, I owe like my career to Jamie, so like I love Jamie. I'm so appreciative for everything he's done, and he's put out a shitload of my music on Hot Creations. I've lost track of how many songs I've had out on Hot Creations, but even though he's put out loads, he didn't take everything. He couldn't take everything. So, like, I was accumulating all these different styles that didn't fit operations. And I was like, I need to get these tracks out. So that was summit. And then also just DJing and getting sent a lot of music off different artists and stuff like that, and like unsigned music and stuff. And I was just thinking, like, this music needs to get out there, and like, I want to be associated with this music as well. It's so fucking cool. And like this, I had like so much stuff, and I was like, it just makes sense to just start something. And for my own music, it's like, you can just put out, I can put out what I want, package it together, like work around my own dates and stuff. Because when you're with other labels with remixes and all that, you're doing kind of what they want in terms of schedule and stuff like that. So it's just more creative control. And then it's been the best thing ever doing it. And like, I'm so happy that we've started. And then to have stuff like your new one on, to like that, that's like an honor for me to be putting these songs out that are just so cool. And obviously you're actually one of the more established artists that we've had on the label.
Yeah.
Because most of it has been more kind of up and coming names and stuff like that.
I was going to say that because, and you literally took the words out of my mouth, is it was like the label feels like you're growing a community around it. It feels like you're growing like a family, which for me is like the most exciting thing about a label. The last time I saw a label do that was Dirty Bird back years ago, and how they kind of created this just family of artists, that there was like five or six artists that no one had a fucking clue who they were, but they kept on releasing music and kept on releasing music, and then the original five of Dirty Bird became huge artists. And it just feels like you're kind of growing something really special there. Was that the plan?
Yeah, it yes and not. Like, it wasn't like contrived and to do that, and it might not even become anything as formed as what you're saying as Dirty Bird, but I feel like organically it's just kind of taken that route. It seems to be going that way, but still in its early days, really. It's less than 2 years old. But I do like that idea. I mean, because I was brought up as part of a crew like that with Hot Creations. You know what I mean? Like, Hot Creations did that so well. And I think Jamie's rubbed off on me in so many ways. And I seen what they did with their residents. And I think I do like that style. I've always admired it with Dirty Bird and with Minus before that, and like Cocoon and stuff like that. I've always liked these type of ideas of these crews. And I've just been so lucky as well to come into contact with some artists that fit that work like that really well.
Yeah.
Such as like Elliot Adamson. He's a lad from around mine. Well, he's from Sunderland, which is just like next door to Newcastle. Well, just outside. So he doesn't say he's from Sunderland, but he's from around here, Houghton Lee Spring. And so I got to know him like organically, just in the clubbing scene in Newcastle and stuff. And it just turns out that he's just this incredible artist, like terrifyingly prolific and talented.
He's insane. He's he's stuff. Amazing. He's so prolific on what on everything he releases, but also the amount he has. He's just constantly writing, and he's kind of one of these like really creative people that's just like everything he puts out is weird but really good.
Yeah, he's amazing, and I think, and what's so good about it as well, he was new and up and coming and from the same area of me, and he's doing his own thing. He's got his own label and stuff too, but I'm just so happy with how involved he wants to be with Trick as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he helps with the A&R. He loves to play any event, any opportunity to release music. He's there. He has released music. He's got more music coming. He he's taken the active role in the A&R thing. He's always bouncing ideas off us, and buzz of how much he feels invested in the label as well, which is cool. And then also a lad called Ewan McVickers came into my life through just sending in a demo. I didn't know him. He's from Scotland. And he's also shown so much enthusiasm and love towards the label as well. And he's starting to do some of the shows, and he's had a release, and he's got more releases coming. So then, yeah, I can see why you say it starts to look a bit like that. And then there's other people like Daddy Dino, which I've got to thank you for, by the way, because he's been a mate of mine. I got to know him when I first went to New York for a gig in 2014.
Yeah.
He's actually become a really good mate of mine. Like, he was at my wedding and we hang out whenever I'm in New York. Like, he's my person to go to, and like, he's, and then he's been in the UK a bit. So I've seen him a bit there and stuff. So I'm buzzing that he's been involved, because I had him on a track, and then Ben Hemsley got him on a track, and then you got him on a track as well. So that looks like I've cultivated that, but yeah, actually you just brought Daddy Dino back to me, which was amazing. And now I'm buzzing that you did that. And actually, I'm wondering, how did you and him hook up?
So he was just on the podcast. I've literally just released the episode with him today. We worked out that the year you met him is the year I met him in America.
Oh, right.
So I've been mates with him for years. And we've just always hung out, and when I lived in New York, we would kind of hung out a bit and just always been in touch. And yeah, I just hit him up and was like, dude, he'd always hit me up and be like, we have to do a record. And I was like, yeah, I know we do, it just needs to be the right one. And then he just started sending me like random vocal snippets, and I was like, this is the money shot right now. And then yeah, we kind of wrote the records. But yeah, that's how I know him. So we've known him for the same amount of time. But obviously,
amazing. I never knew.
Yeah, just obviously is not Daddy Dino.
Yeah, Mikey.
But I love that guy. He's a different species of human being that just brings joy to every kind of place that you're with. He's just amazing. And I always find everyone knows him. Like, everyone's kind of always had some sort of experience with him that will always like stick in their lives. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, he's cool as fuck, and I'm so glad that he's become like a regular artist on the label, and he's someone I want to do more with. And like, he's another one who like loves the label and loves being involved. So like, naturally just become like one of those guys and kind of feels like part of the label family, which is mint. And I do love that it's going that way. And I was going to say something about Mike. Oh yeah, Mike's also been a huge inspiration in my life, because when I first got to know Mike, he was teetotal.
Yeah.
He was sober, and he was sober, right? And person that I'd ever met personally, and like, I couldn't believe it. And he was always, I was playing in New York and he would take me to after parties and he would be sober. I mean, him would be DJing back to back at after parties and he would be sober. And that whole idea of being sober at a party back then was completely alien to me. Yeah. I was like the opposite of that. So, but seeing him do that and how confident he was, because for me, confidence in social situations used to come from the crutch of the drink or whatever.
Yeah.
So seeing him do that, it played a big part in me. I did a year sober, and he played a big part because it inspired me, because I was like, look at him having the time of his fucking life sober. I need to do that. So yeah. I don't even know whether I've ever told him. I probably have.
how did you find the year of being off the juice?
Amazing.
Are you drinking now or not?
Little bit.
Occasionally, yeah.
Little bit, like a little bit. It was the best year of my life. I reckon it was so good. It was unbelievable. It was, I think I did it in, I've lost track of when I did now. It was mainly 2018, I think. And it changed my life for the good, because I just grew so much as a person because of it. All the situations that you get put in, even such as like at my dad's wedding, I was best man, I had to do a speech. Usually I would have a drink in that situation, you know what I mean? Like things like that, like going back to back with Pete Tong live on Radio 1, doing interviews with him and all, and they're like doing loads of backstage interviews with cameras and all that type of thing, and just everything. There's so many, it's quite a sociable thing, but like DJing and stuff like that. So I think I was getting more confident anyway as a person growing just off getting put in these new situations anyway.
Yeah.
But then when you take the drink out of it as well, and it just flipped DJing for us as well. Like DJing is much better sober. It is so much better. Now when I play, I get like tingles down my arms. I get like goosebumps all over my hair stand on it. I have those moments. I didn't used to actually have those moments, you know, because I was just fucking zoned out. Like, yeah. It can be fun DJing as well. That kind of feeling of just like, oh, this is reckless and wild, but like it just can be a buzz as well. And I still do enjoy that from time to time. But really, DJing sober on the whole is so much better. And since I did that year sober, I hardly ever drink now. Hardly ever.
Yeah.
I hardly ever party, but I mean I had a few big ones last year in 2019, but like I probably count those on two hands.
Yeah, you're drinking to have fun. You're not drinking to kind of like mask the nerves or anything like that, which is what it's kind of there for, right?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I do go all out and get fucked, but it's very rare. And like the thing is now, it's a choice. Whereas before,
totally,
it was more of a crutch, maybe. Well, no, I've still always enjoyed it, and I do enjoy it now and again. But it was more of a like a necessity, and like I was just in that routine, if it just went hand in hand all the time. And now it's made it more fun and special, because if I do want to do that and have a big blowout, it's more fun because it's not as regular. And to be honest, I kind of like the idea of doing another year sober, and I might even do that at some point, just because it's just all the opportunities that come with it, it's just easier. I mean, now it's not even like, I don't even find it hard to do it. Like, I enjoy the. But yeah, anyway, I'm ranting it on now. But the thing is, I don't want to preach about it too much, because I don't want to be that guy. But there's been times where I've been holding my tongue because I've been like, do you realize how fucking good it is?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's weird because I actually got an email today from somebody that's like, they do like a sobriety podcast, and they want to talk to DJs about being sober. And I'm like, I've pretty much always been sober. Like, it's just because I don't like it. It just doesn't agree with me. It's not because I've had issues with it. So I always find it weird when someone's like, oh, you're in sobriety, how do you find it, blah blah blah. And it's like, well, it's just normal life for me, because I just don't like, I wish I liked beer, but I fucking can't stand the taste of it, so that's why I don't drink. But it is weird when, I don't know if you find that, where like it's not really been an issue in your life. It's not really affected your life.
No, it's never been an issue for me. Yeah. I mean, like, I think I've been, I have spoiled some gigs with it and not enjoyed the gig because of the mental state I've been in, which is so stupid. That's been the thing. That was one of the factors that led us up to that. Yeah. It's like, I got in this for the music, and I have these amazing opportunities. I want to enjoy all of them. But it's never really been like an issue for us, but there is just like, even though it can be fun and stuff, there is negative sides to it. Like the hangover is just horrible.
It's
like,
not worth it, is it?
Not Very, very rarely for me these days, anyway, put it that way.
Yeah. Have you ever cried after playing or during playing?
You know what? I haven't cried, but the one time when I, during lockdown, actually, I didn't cry, but I nearly did. I felt overwhelmed. Yeah. You know, when lockdown started, I did my first lockdown stream from the house.
Yeah.
And was one of the best experiences of my life doing that stream. Really? Yeah, it was the highlight of this year for me, because when the lockdown came, it was over. I know I was saying earlier I've been enjoying this year and that, and on the whole I have been, but like, I mean, everyone has the ups and downs, and it has been quite a mad experience for anyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even if you feel comfortable in your life and what you've got going on, it's still being thrown upside down. You know what I mean? So when the lockdown started, it was mad. I can remember going to the supermarket the first time, and it just felt like something out of a film, an end of the world film, like a doomsday type scenario, judgment day type scenario.
It's so weird, isn't it?
Wasn't it? And then I remember going in there, and it was just so weird. So there's been times since been like that, but then anyway, I did a stream not long after that, about 6 weeks into lockdown, and at the time the UK was like heavy in its first full-on lockdown.
Yeah.
And doing that stream and connecting with people, because I hadn't been out the house, people weren't seeing each other, but to reconnect with so many people, and so many people tuned into that stream as well. Like on my Facebook page, I think at one point it hit over 10,000 live viewers. Jeez. on Facebook. And we're doing it on YouTube as well. So I was blown away by that. And I got told of Hayley, there's that many people are clocked into it. And I was like, wow. And I was just thinking about everyone in their own homes, and people were messaging in and stuff. And then I finished the set, and it just felt really profound to me, because I felt people were so excited for the set, messaging us beforehand, we can't wait, this is going to be the highlight of the lockdown. And then people messaging us after us saying it was amazing, and they had fun on a Friday night when they've been like having a shit time.
Yeah.
And just to have that feedback of people. And when I stopped playing and I finished the set, and it was quite a long set, it was like 3.5 hours, I started playing some kind of like euphoric kind of emotional tunes and stuff like that, and I felt kind of overwhelmed by that in a good way. But yeah, I didn't cry, but I think I was close to it.
Yeah, it's such a strange feeling, isn't it? Because I've had it like maybe once or twice when it's on stage, and it's just like that overwhelming feeling for me one of them was at Crossed festival in San Diego.
It's a sick festival.
Yeah, it's a cool festival. And I don't know, I think it was just like, you know, I don't know if you are, but as an artist, I'm like super like doubt hard on myself. Like I'm always thinking like, Will, you can always do better. Like you can always play a better set, or you can always write a better song or whatever. And generally most sets I'm like, oh, that was all right, but I can do this next time and it will be better. But that set, I was like, I fucking did it. Like, it was just that feeling where I was like, I couldn't have done any better in that situation. And that was the feeling for me where I was like, wow, that was something special. Doesn't happen often at all.
Ah, you're harsh on yourself.
Yeah.
No, I know what you mean. Like, I kind of... You just know, don't you, how a set's went.
Yeah.
And I hate that feeling if I know I could have done better, but like, I don't know. Most of the time I come away from it on the biggest high ever.
I love that.
To be honest, like, it's for me, it's now and again that I feel like, oh, that could have went a little bit better. But most of the time, I'm feeling so happy after doing a set, and it's such a crazy experience, isn't it?
How important is Newcastle in your life? Because when we released the record last week on the label, I had quite a few people hit me up and be like, "Welcome to the Newcastle family."
Oh, really? That's amazing.
I was like, wow, this is amazing. And obviously, I know Newcastle is your home and you do crazy shows up there. But how important is it to you, having a city that embraces you as a kind of an artist and a person?
Sorry, just the fucking light went out. I don't know if that...
It doesn't matter. It didn't.
It looks all right.
Yeah, it looks fine.
I put an extra light there because the lighting's not that bad.
Newcastle. How important is it?
No, massively. I love that you said you've got those messages there, and I love that we've just had Ben Hemsley on the label because he's a mate of mine from Newcastle. He's from the exact same part of Newcastle as me, North Shields, and he's been an old pal of mine for years as well, so that's class. And Meg Ward, who's just done a remix for you, she's from Newcastle.
Oh, is she? I didn't know she was from Newcastle.
Yeah, she's from Newcastle. I didn't know her beforehand. I actually just randomly came across her on SoundCloud, and then I found out she was from Newcastle, and then that was even more of an incentive for me to try and get her on, because I do love the idea of creating, getting as many local artists on as possible. And I love to have that identity, actually, of kind of repping Newcastle, doing events here. We've got some plans for some even bigger stuff here, and I want to be doing regular stuff here. And it's a huge market for me. And well, markets maybe is the wrong term. That sounds a bit kind of like,
we get it though, man.
It's a huge place for me to play, because obviously I'm from here and I've been playing regularly here for years because I was a promoter here before me DJing took off. So I've been promoting here since 2010. So I was, or 2009, I'm not sure. No, it was 2010. So I've been regularly promoting and playing in Newcastle for like 3 or 4 years before my career took off outside of Newcastle.
Yeah.
But then I carried on promoting a lot here whilst my career was going on. So I play in Newcastle a lot. I know some DJs don't really play in their hometown that much. But I've been, because of that promoting before, I've had that connection there.
Yeah.
And it's always so special playing here, and like the amount of like love I get from people from here is amazing. And that blows me away. And I still live here as well. You see, most of my friends are here. My family's here. So I've never lived anywhere else. Well, I have lived in Edinburgh for 3 years, but that was for uni, for university. But then I've been toying with the idea of moving at various times. I was going to move to London. I was thinking, oh, I need to be in Melbourne. I need to be in LA.
Yeah, you have a crazy following in Australia, don't you?
Yeah, Australia's like my second home.
You're like, every time I remember, I think it was like a couple of years ago, and you'd like done like 3 or 4 tours then. I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, how can you tour that much in Australia? Because like my experience of Australia is not your experience, clearly. How did that come about?
Well, it's this guy called Mike Toner.
Yeah.
Do you know? I know Mike. Have you worked? Have you? Two of you?
He doesn't, but I've done shows with him at Revs.
Right, well, you should tour with him. Right?
He doesn't take me.
He will. He is the man. You know what? With him, right, I actually owe a lot to him in Australia, because my first international... I mean, I had done a few gigs around Europe, but I think I possibly went to Australia before I went to America.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite a rare thing, maybe. And Mike basically took a gamble on me because he says he does one tour every year where he does it for like passion, basically, like not based on whether he thinks that artist is going to be able to pull a crowd and sell tickets and fill venues.
Yeah.
He like takes a gamble on someone who he's like into. And he wasn't, he got into one of my first releases called Any Amounts on Hot Creations. It came out before Forget. So it came out in 2013. And off the back of that, he messaged us and said, oh, do you want to come and do this tour? And I was like, I fucking obviously. So I did this. So I did this tour over there. And me and him really connected as friends as well. Like, Mike's a good mate of mine now. And he's so good at his job of being a touring agent and also a promoter in Melbourne. And I connected with Australia because I had a lot of friends who moved there. It's quite a common thing in the UK for people to go and live in Australia. So I had loads of pals there. So, and me and Hayley had always wanted to go there. So I was just so keen to go there and like always make the most of it. And I was always like prioritizing it over other territories.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd be like, yeah, because we've got friends there. We just connected with the place, we just love it. So like I'd be like, yeah, I'll go for 3 weeks, I'll go for two weeks, I'll do two tours a year every year. And Mike was really putting us on really good shows and stuff like that, and it just connected with the Australian people and then all the British lot who are over there, because there's a lot of them there.
That's
as well
loads, yeah.
And luckily it's just kind of came together where outside of the UK, like Australia's my biggest place to go, and like arguably as big as the UK in some ways. I mean, some of my biggest shows I've done have been there. Like, I can't remember how many was that. The last big one I did, it was 5,000 or maybe 6,000, and it was crazy, man. And we've done a few shows like that. I think we've done 3 really big headline shows and myself where they've been like 5,000.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And then the scene there is just so good. I know some people haven't connected with it, but I've just always had fun playing there.
Yeah, see, I'm the opposite. Like, and this is no disrespect to Australia. I wish I could have connected to it, and I'm sure it will come.
Yeah, I think,
but it's just, you know, just takes so long. It's not that. I think for me, it's just finding the right home there. When you're just like, I don't know. It just feels like there's so many factors there to.
I don't know what the why I've connected with Australia so much, but I'm so glad I have, because, say, for instance, I played at a festival called Rainbow Serpent Festival.
Yeah.
And it was the most fun I've ever had playing at a festival, hands down. The most enjoyable time I've had DJing. That was sober.
And you've played some festivals. Like,
yeah,
let's
man.
Be
I've
honest.
been so lucky.
Yeah.
To do them, and that is honestly the most fun I've ever had at a festival, the DJing. And even afterwards, I then went and got involved, and I ended up, I think that's when I ended up breaking my year, my year sober, actually. After my set, I stayed and I got involved and I stayed there for 24 hours and enjoyed the dance floor and listened to other DJs, which I rarely do these days. Like, I used to be a raver like that. That's, I guess, some DJs don't come from that background of being a clubber. Some of them are more, they've come up through the production side, but not so much being in the clubbing side. But that's what got me wanting to be a DJ, because I used to love going to events and listening to DJs. And that's something I've lost over the years. I haven't been doing as much. And I did it there for the first time in ages. And I can remember just being blown away by it. And I remember listening to Patrice Baumel's set and Matador's set.
He's amazing. Both of them are amazing.
Yeah, amazing. And I came back from that, and it was the last gig, because every year I take off a period to make music.
Yeah.
And I do, it started off as being February every year for a month. And then it's progressively got a bit longer and longer. And I think last year I did 7 or 8 weeks, but I also tie it in as a time, because my birthday is in February, for a holiday as well.
Yeah.
So it's like my time off to recuperate from the year, like get my sleep back, like try and be healthy, diet train. And my main time for making music for the whole year, because I don't really, I find it hard to make music when I'm touring so much. I do bits, but that's my main time to make it. So anyway, after Rainbow Serpent, that was my last gig, and I came back home and I went in the studio and I made a song of mine called Snide, what come out on Trick last year.
Yeah.
And that was completely inspired by the experience of listening to Matador's set on the dance floor. I don't know why I've went off on that tangent, but I just, I do kind of, yeah, because since I've been DJing, it's changed my whole relationship with music, because I used to just be in the house listening to electronic music, house music, techno music, disco music in the house. And now I very rarely listen to that in the house.
I'm the same, man. Yeah. I only really listen to stuff if I kind of want to reference, or if I want to, like, if there's like the odd night where I'm like, okay, let's just have a party in my house by myself and put the speakers on and listen to some music. But it's very rarely I would go to house and techno or anything kind of electronic to listen to.
Why do you think that is?
For me, it's because I am always trying to pick apart a record. I'm like, how did they that?
Okay.
How did they do this? That's why I didn't come from the rave. My first experience in a club was DJing, and that was when I was like 13. So I never went.
13?
Yeah.
What?
So when I first started, I did go and rave, but I always just wanted to fucking DJ. I never wanted to be on a dance floor. And then when I started writing when I was like 16, from then on, I was like, I don't want to go to a party. I just want to, like, the music that they're making, I need to learn how to make that. And that's why I don't often go to clubs, unless I'm playing, is because I'm always trying to, like, oh fuck, that sounds really good, how do I do that? Or like, how has he made that synth? Or that vocal's been processed amazingly, how do I do that? What about for you?
See, I still love raving.
Yeah.
Like, I do absolutely love it. I do enjoy listening to music, electronic music in the house. It's just not my number one choice. So I'd choose to listen to other stuff, but I still do enjoy it if I listen to it in the house. But I think just because it's my life so much, you know, like finding music, yeah, making music, hearing what music's out there and taking it in, absorbing it. I feel like it's just the fun's kind of been taken out of it, yeah, for us in a way, but not in terms of hearing it in the live environment, in the clubs and the festivals. I love that, but I hardly ever get to do that because my schedule is so mad. And then also, it can be, depending where you are, it can be not that enjoyable also, because you kind of can't get lost in the moment because people recognize it and all, yeah, that. So that's
see, for me, I've like starting to get shows booked in for next year. And I haven't done a single, I've kind of refused to do a live stream. Like, I've kind of for me, like, live streams aren't, they're not for me personally. But I think,
why is that? I've seen Solomon did a post about a similar type of thing. I don't think he's done one, and he said he wasn't going to do one and it wasn't for him.
Yeah.
I
think for me is like, I know people would like it. I really do. I'm pretty sure if I did one, I know people would like it. but I just don't, I don't think I'd enjoy it.
Mate, you know what? I honestly think that you're missing out. And I think you should try one.
Do you reckon?
Seriously, I've done three and I have another one. I'm about to announce another one.
Yeah.
And the I told you that story about the first one. It was unbelievable, man. And that type of, I know it's not what it's not, it can't replace what it was, but this is the situation, you know what I mean? So
totally.
It still does, well, for me, it did connect like that. And then I did another one, which was for Insomniac, and I did that from Digital in Newcastle, a club. Yeah. That one was good, but it wasn't the same for me because it was pre-recorded, that one. You see, the one where I did it in my house, it was actually live, like it.
Yeah.
Whereas the one in Digital, we recorded it and then put it out live because of the time difference, and it was just because the way they wanted the production done on it, and it was the same with the Edinburgh one I did, because we had like a drone, different camera angles and stuff to get the production better with post-production. It was better to put it out that way. So the pre-recorded ones for me didn't hit anywhere near like that first live one. And my next one is going to be probably live again like that, because it was such a buzz and I can't wait to do it again. But that being said, the Edinburgh one was a mint buzz in a different way, because I used to live in Edinburgh for uni. So then they got the site for it. It was unbelievable. And this historic site, and it just looked spectacular. And Terminal V, they got all the production in. So they had like lasers, they had Trick, Sean on these monuments and everything like that. And that the sunset, it looked like Grand Theft Auto, like where the light was. It was amazing. So that was such a buzz, because I was like, hey, how the fuck am I up here playing with all this shit? It's class. And even though I knew it wasn't going out then, it was such a buzz. And
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe you should try. You know, I mean, you don't know how long this, I don't know, hopefully this doesn't last much longer, but
what's your thoughts on social distanced events?
Yeah, have you done any yet?
I've got a few coming up next year. Cool. But I've been asked to do some, but all of them were in America. So the next one that I'm doing is in January, and which is in London. And I'm shitting my pants. I haven't played. Hey. I haven't played in like, well, yeah, 10 months.
But it's like riding a bike. it is. Do you know what I mean? You'll be sound. But the social distance gigs have been amazing for me. Like absolutely class. I've done three.
Yeah.
I did this one in Newcastle, and that was the first one I did, and that was unbelievable, man. It was like 2,500 people there, and it was like a big festival stage. Everyone had their own little platforms, and it was amazing. And loads of people slagged it off online, not people who had been, Like, I didn't see one negative comment of anyone who had been about the event and was about that, the vibe.
Was that the Virgin?
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Virgin thing. That looked amazing.
It was amazing. And everyone who went was singing his praises and being like, it was class. It was the best day of the year. It made the whole, it saved with summer. These were literally people saying shit like that. And I felt like that. And all my friends felt like that. And it was so good. And it wasn't even that much difference. All the people signing off online were the people who weren't there, who would be like, oh, this looks shit. What the fuck's that? But all the people who had went were like, no, it was mint.
Yeah.
So you always can get people saying stuff like that. And to be honest, it was absolutely mint. And it wasn't even that much different to a normal festival because of the production, the size of it. And like, okay, usually the crowd was spread out so far. Usually there would be about 20,000 people there filling that amount of space. So the crowd wasn't as loud because the crowd's just not as dense. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the people who were there were going ballistic because they hadn't been to anything. They were dying to do something. So they were getting more into it than, say, maybe they usually would. So they were making up for the lost, for the empty space around them. And it was such a vibe. And so many people said, there were so many other positives as well, such as you never lost your mates because you're like, that's part of the thing. If you're at a rave festival, you're just constantly looking for your mates.
Thought of that. That's amazing. Yeah.
So they always knew where the mates were. They could put the bags, the coats, the drinks down on the floor without having to carry them, not worried about anyone pinching them, jump around, not people wrecked, falling into them and all that, have their own space. So there's that type of thing, and like some female comments saying that it felt like a safer zone as well. You didn't have that aspect of it as well. So I think it's not going to replace the normal kind of setup. Once COVID goes, it'll go back to how it was, and everything that's good and bad with that will go back, and it'll be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the meantime, for me, this is such a good solution for me. It was so good. And then I did another two slightly smaller versions. I think there were 500 capacity each in Gisborne and one for We Are Festival down Essex.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was, I think that was 500 as well. And they were equally really, really, really good. I enjoyed them. They were amazing. I loved them. So I had two planned for Manchester as well, and they were sold out. But then because of the way the lockdown changed, that got cancelled. But we're looking at some of our ones for next year. And I mean, I'm excited for them.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to doing it because it's just been something that, I haven't played for ages. I don't have decks in here where I live in the UK. They're all in America. And it's really annoying because I literally, two weeks before I got here, or I had to come back to the UK, I had like new decks turn up at my house in Detroit. It's like the first time I've had decks in a mixer for like years. So it's kind of a shitter that it's over there.
But how come you live in Detroit? it's so random to me. A lad from Cornwall lives in Detroit.
Yeah. It's, everyone always asks me that, it's like, so I used to live in LA in America. And then I wasn't a huge fan of LA. So then moved to New York, absolutely loved New York. And then I needed a place like more permanent because I was touring so much there. And I was going to take an apartment in New York, but it's just so expensive and I'm never there. So do you know Jen from Mean Red? She's a promoter in New York. You've probably played for her a bunch.
Mean Red?
Yeah, Mean Red's the night. She used to be promoter at Output in New York. So she was like, why don't you move to Detroit? Like, she just bought like a huge apartment block in Detroit and was like, you can have one of the apartments there. I was like, okay, cool, let's try it. So I tried it. I didn't love it, but it kind of fit my lifestyle. And then I just bought a house there. So it's kind of just It's an interesting city, man. I have this like love-hate relationship with it. It's extremely sad with what's happened there over the since the 60s. It's just extremely sad. But also it has so much culture there, so much like heritage in music and fashion and just American history. And it's going to take a long time for it to be a major city in America, but there's a community there that I really like. And some of my favorite shows are in Detroit that I play in America. So it kind of just like felt right to be there. I'm not going to be there forever. I want to be back in the UK. But it's a nice home for the time being.
So did you know anyone in Detroit? Do you have a friend group there or something?
I had a few mates. So there was a guy called Troy who used to book me quite a lot there at a place called Grasshopper. Did you ever play there?
I've never been, no.
Oh, man. When that was in its heyday, it was the dungeon of Detroit. It was just fucking amazing. It was like 150 cap, but they'd fit like 400 people in. And it was just like low ceilings. People would like crowd surf and shit like that. It's wild. So I played there quite a lot and just I built up some friends from obviously the Dirty Bird crew. There's a few people that used to work there. Work with Dirty Bird, live in Detroit. So
Built
up a cool friendship group. It is strange moving to a city where you're like, I don't have any family. I don't have any like close friends. But it's definitely changed me as a person, 100%. It's made me feel extremely grateful for what I have in the UK and how I was brought up as well. Whereas I never really saw that in LA. I never saw that in New York or anything like that.
That's cool. Whereabouts in LA and New York? Where are you living? Because I love LA and New York.
I lived in Silver Lake in LA.
I've never been there. I've heard about it.
It's like just full of hipsters, really. It's just...
I need to go and check it out.
Yeah, man, go. It's a cool place. It's the part of LA where you can like walk around and... You don't have to drive everywhere, really. It's just a bit more chill. It's a bit more like villagey vibes.
I think my mate was living there, actually.
Pretty much anybody that we would be friends with would be living in Echo Park, Silver Lake, or like Los Feliz or something like that, on like LA, on like the Los Angeles Hills or something like that, Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
And then in New York, I lived in Williamsburg. Of course I did.
Nice. I love it there as well.
Man, I would move to New York tomorrow again. It's just, for me, it's just a place I absolutely love. I love it.
I do. It's like, I proposed to Hayley in New York,
really?
And me and her moved there last May in 2019. We lived in New York just for a month.
I remember, because you played Dirty Bird Campout, didn't you? And I think you were coming to the end of living there.
Dirty Bird Campout was an amazing gig. I've had some good gigs in Detroit as well. Like every time I play at Movement, that just feels so... I think I've done Movement 3 times now. And every time I do it, that's just so special to me, being in like the, obviously with the origins of techno there, and then the backdrop of the General Motors building and stuff. It just looks amazing. And then I've been at some wild after parties in Detroit as well. Actually, last year, I did have a mad one in Detroit last year. And I played an after party for Kevin Saunderson at this club. It was like, I think it was like a bowling alley. Do you know it?
Yeah. Magic Stick is called.
Yeah. I played there.
I think I saw you.
You might have. That was one of the times where I was completely fucked when I played at the after party, which I rarely do these days. And then we went from there to some after party in this like abandoned building. Basically, it was like this dilapidated building. We went downstairs, but it was really grand. And it had like red candles, and it felt like we were in a rave in hell. It was a fucking amazing, man. Kenny Glasgow was playing, Dubfire was there, loads of DJs were there, and it was just, I think it was some type of illegal rave. It was unbelievable, though. And then also that old Miami, what Seth Troxler did, I went to that one. that once with Jamie. That was quite a
That sucks that old Miami's not. It's still there, but they don't do that at movement anymore, which is a shame. It's the one thing that I find in Detroit is that because it's a little more lawless than the rest of America, it's a little bit more like, yeah, there's just no cops, pretty much. There's barely any cops, and the last thing they want to be worrying about is shutting down a party. It's changing a little bit now, but you can throw parties in, like, illegal areas. Like, last year, we did a party where you had to like text a number to get, like the old days, like you had to text a number to get the address, and then they get sent the address and then come down. And it was just like, you can't really do that in cities nowadays. Whereas in Detroit, you can still get away with it a little bit more.
Yeah, it was definitely, it had that kind of lawless, really kind of slightly dangerous but fun vibe to it. Yeah, honestly, yeah. That was one of the best days I've had that in Detroit when we were in the after party. But
the guys that run Movement, the Paxahow guys, they do an amazing job in that city as well. Like they've really kind of brought back the heritage of techno into Detroit and do this crazy stuff, and there's a lot of really cool promoters in Detroit that put on like really small kind of underground parties that you don't really get in the major cities, because you physically can't afford to put them on because venue rent is so much money and things like that, whereas in Detroit it's cheap, property is cheap in America, in Detroit.
I played another small club in Detroit. It's always been Detroit, actually. Actually, I didn't play it. I just went to another after party. It's good.
It's good fun. It's good fun, man. So obviously COVID is shit, but what's the plan for 2021 for Patrick Toppin?
Well, who knows how it's going to go? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're just kind of putting stuff in the diary now and hoping things can go ahead. There's so much exciting stuff. Got some big trick shows planned because I had some amazing stuff planned for Trick this year.
Yeah.
And then that was disheartening. And then I had some really good gigs for me. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake. And I was a bit like, will my stars align in the same way again, or have I missed these opportunities? Was this my time for these gigs? And I was, but you can't really dwell on it too much. And then some of the things that have been cancelled have been rearranged for next year, luckily, and some of them haven't, but some new opportunities have came around and stuff. So I'm really excited. Just it's the idea is we had just started. We've done the first series of events. We've done five events with the label, and they were amazing. Well, last one we did was at the Warehouse Project in Manchester.
That looked insane.
Mate, there was 8,000 people there, man.
It's fucking wild.
Right? Man. It was so good, and the venue was amazing. And we did the train station in Amsterdam. That was fucking so good. Did the launch party in Newcastle, which was like 5,000 people in Newcastle, which is like, thing people don't do stuff like that in Newcastle. And then we had, what else did we have? We had Derry. That was amazing as well. I think that was 3,000 people in Derry. And we did London at E1 as well, which was cool.
Do you know what I love? What you guys do with the events? And it's only from what I've seen online, but you actually put time and effort into the production of the event, where you're not just rocking up to a club and just putting a lineup on and hoping people. You're like actually giving people are paying to see you, right? A lot of people have seen you already. A lot of people haven't, but you're giving them an experience that no one else has given them.
Yeah, well, that was the idea. I didn't just want to do what you said, just like put the trick name on the flyer and that be it. I wanted to build something bigger than that. So spent a lot of time creatively and also invested in it a lot.
Yeah.
And then that was, so I invested in that, and then COVID hit as well. So it didn't, so then that's a kind of a double fucking whammy there. So then that was kind of worrying, and I was like, we've invested all this, and we haven't even got an opportunity to try and get it to build on it. And then COVID hit, and it's like, oh fuck, what's going to happen? But then luckily we've got some good partners who we're going to do stuff with next year, and hopefully, because we got off to such a good start, that 5 events was amazing. I was buzzing, and we were going to take that to the next level this year. But if all goes to plan, next year is going to, we're going to luckily keep, it looks like we're going to be able to keep that momentum going. Fingers crossed. And yeah, we can build on it. And I'm just excited to get that. I'm excited to see how we can keep going with it, because it's a really fun project. I love it.
I think at the end of the day, man, I think what you're building from the outside, from somebody in the industry from the outside, is like you're growing something that's going to be around for a very, very long time. And it's so nice to see somebody doing something different and refreshing. It's like finally somebody's invested in themselves. And I can promise you that it will pay off in the long term. I promise you, man, it will be worth it.
Well, it's so nice of you to pick up on it, and it's meant to hear that. And then it's been, you know what, it's been such a fun side as well of starting the label, like the creative side of like stage design and venue dressing, and like along with like curating the label and curating the artists on the events. And then now getting quite more into like the visual side of the label and stuff as well. I love doing that. And that's been another good thing with this year. I've had more opportunity to do that type of thing as well. And I'm just like, I just love doing it. I mean, you're probably the same. Like it's our passion, isn't it? So totally. Like I work every day on various things, whether it's in the studio, the creative side of Trick, the A&R side of Trick, or even more on the admin side of Trick, or even the DJing career. To be honest, I spend most of my time on the business side of stuff more than I do actually making music.
Yeah.
Do
you like that? Do you prefer that?
I do love that side, because it's my life. I live it. And like every day I need to stop myself from working. Like I need, like most time during this COVID, I haven't even been having the weekends off. It's just been blown into one. And then it'll get to the point where I'm like, all right, I've worked for like 14 days in a row. I'm going to force myself to have a day off.
It's wild, isn't it? It's wild. Yeah. Cause for me, it's exactly the same. And I literally was like, I'm not somebody that to go on holiday. I don't ever go on holidays. It's just like, for me, touring and then being in a studio isn't really work, but it is if you think about it. But I was just like, Will, you need to book like a day off. Or so I booked like a few days in London just to like in a hotel, just so I don't have to do anything. But it's so weird being in COVID, because it's not like we have to go to the airport. It's not like we have to do anything. So it's just like, oh, fuck it. Let's just work. Let's just get on the emails. Let's get in the studio. Let's do something. And it's constant, isn't it? It's weird.
Yeah. I feel so lucky to have this in my life. And especially during COVID, because I've got music and everything that goes with it. Because even though the gigs have stopped, the music industry hasn't stopped. Mm. And like, there's always something to do. And because like you say, it doesn't feel like work, because I'm so lucky to have a passion, which is also my career. So it's easily done. Yeah, there's always something to do. But then that's also why I like to turn my phone off. And I've been doing it a lot during this time, because when I'm on the road, I can't do it so much, because you need to be in contact with various people. And it's been an opportunity to switch off from my phone, because I think like I go on my phone too much. And there's always there's always, you can always do work on your phone as well as like you can have fun, procrastinate, but there's always work there. And yeah. It's been, when I have been wanting to do something more creative in the studio, music wise, I've been tending to turn my phone off.
Really?
Even if it's just for half a day, or sometimes it would be for like a week even, and then really throw myself into that and switch off from my phone and try, obviously I've got emails on my computer that'll be going on, but try to not do any social media and try to really focus on the creative side. And I don't know, I just feel like with what's going on at the minute with not touring, and I'm lucky that I don't have kids. I don't have those responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, when I start touring again, and then we might try for kids in a couple of years and stuff, I'm like, this is probably the calmest moment of my life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah,
before the whirlwind of the gig starts, and then kids, and then I mean, like, this is the time when I can be selfish and take time for myself to do what I really want to do, which. What I really want to do is make music, but I do love the other side of the business as well. Like I buzz off it, and I'm really hands on with the management side of it.
How has it been taking time off social media? Like, how important has that been in your like life?
I've still been doing stuff because I enjoy that as well. Yeah. You know what I mean? I do it all myself. I could never give my social media to a lot of artists have companies that there's professional companies that manage people's pages, yeah, and stuff like that. And I couldn't do that. I enjoy it so much. I enjoy the interaction. I enjoy presenting stuff how I want to present it. I find it is a creative pursuit in a way. And but I just need to sometimes pull myself away from it and able to really knuckle down in the studio and try and get some stuff out.
Well, it's also, social media is as mad as it sounds, it's also still work for us. Like,
yeah,
like,
no,
it is work. Like, for me, like, I wouldn't, if it wasn't a way to interact with the fans and kind of give back to the fans, because I think social media is a lot, like, we ask a lot from our followers, but also we also give a lot back by being able to interact with people that in 10 years ago, you couldn't have had a conversation with your favorite DJ, where now you can. You can slide into their DMs and you can have a conversation with anyone, really. And it's amazing, but also there is work, and it takes a lot out of your day if you're constantly on it. And I know you're on it a lot. But it's interesting that you kind of you've done like a week with like nothing, like not even phone. Does that, like,
I've done that during this year. I think now I've maybe done that now about five times this year, where, wow, I've done like 5 or 6 days or a week without my phone.
Yeah.
During this lockdown, yeah, I've done it quite often, but it's something I've been introducing over the last couple of years. Like, if I say, like, at the end of the Trick launch when we did those five events, because I was touring all the time as well away from the Trick events, and that was the most knackered I've ever been in my life at the end of that November after that Wales project.
Yeah.
We flew to America, and I think I had a gig in LA. I'm not sure. And then I had 5 days off in LA, and I turned my phone off in LA. And there's sometimes if I get those windows throughout the year where I can do, and I just say to people, look, I'm not doing any social media. So sometimes I turn my phone off, but I will be on emails,
yeah,
working still. I just won't have the phone. But sometimes I'll be like, I'm not even in contact. I'm not even on my emails. So we'll plan everything. So, like, there's no deadlines. Nothing needs to be done.
Yeah.
Not talked about. And, like, I think I've only done that about four times in my career. No, maybe it's four or five times where it's complete shut off. But I need to do that now and again for a full-on reset.
I've never done it. But you're kind of like inspiring me to do it, because
it's,
nothing's that important, right?
It's amazing, mate. It's so good for you. And like, even even like not going that extreme, still having the emails on your computer, still even having social media on your computer, but just not having your on it on your phone and turning it off. It just helps you be more in the present and be, I just enjoy my life more when I don't have my phone. To be honest, I fucking hate my phone. I do love it, and but I kind of yearn for that time before phones, but I don't know if I'm a very nostalgic person, and I don't know if I'm just like, oh, grass was greener when I was younger type thing. But yeah. I do, the phone adds so much to my life as well, but sometimes I just get overwhelmed by it, and I have, and I just feel happier when I don't have my phone sometimes. But the social media and WhatsApp to my mates and all that does make us really happy as well. But yeah, sometimes I've just got to step back.
Yeah, I think it's important to be able to also like accept that you want to be on it and you enjoy it, but then there's times you have to step away when the work needs to get done. And it's
also the thing is, like, I feel bad because I don't message my mates as often as I should. I've got like people, I've always got emails or WhatsApps or Instagram inboxes or text messages. There's always I never get back to everyone, or just constantly have my phone in my face, and that's not even talking about people I don't know online. Like, I would like to reply to every follower who messages us, but it's physically impossible. I can't even reply to my mates who I know and like family who I love, because I just feel like overwhelmed. I feel like there's only a certain amount of energy I can have per day to do productive things, and most of it I put into me career. Yeah. So like I kind of neglect me WhatsApp to people I really care about. But I think it's just because I'm pushing myself so hard every day that by the time I'm like, I don't have any energy left to do it. But that's something I need to try and get a better balance of.
I don't know though. I think it's worked for you, right? Like you're at where you're at because of what you've done, right? You've not got where you're at by not fucking doing any work.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I am like a workaholic, definitely. But it's fun. But then, did you watch that Michael Jordan documentary?
Yeah, man.
Everyone watched that. And then I thought I was like into what I'm doing. And then I see him and I'm like, fuck, that's a whole different level of beast that. But like, I found that really inspiring as well.
I watch a lot of those types of things. Like people like Ed Sheeran, he has a, I don't know if you like his music, whether you like his music or not, but he has a documentary on I think it's on iTunes or Apple TV, and it's just so inspiring. He's like,
oh, really?
Dude, it's insane, man.
I'm going to have to watch that because I love stuff like that. Like I see like the Travis Scott one, the Taylor Swift one, things like that. Just really have just massive respect for them. And I just see that type of thing. And I find that inspiring. So I'm definitely going to watch that.
A new one on Netflix, which is the Shawn Mendes one. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a fan of Shawn Mendes' song, but I respect everything that he's done. He's one of the biggest artists in the world. And then I watched this, it's kind of the same as the Taylor Swift one. It's the same as all of them, really. But he's like 22 years old, selling tens of thousands, like stadiums, 106-day tour, nonstop. And you're just like, you're 22 years old. You're touring 106 days in a row. And you're just like that. Like, I'd love to do that. But like, we're lucky. We get, like, if we've got a busy week, we might do 4 shows a week, right? We're not doing 106 shows in a row. And you're just like, how is somebody wired to do this crazy shit? And we think we have it like intense. They have it on another level.
Yeah, obviously that type of celebrity and stuff must be so intense. But then also though, some of our schedules can be ridiculous because a concert doesn't go on till 8 in the morning.
That's the thing.
You know what I mean? So you can be doing like basically night shift for 4 days a week and travel different country to country in between. So it can be intense.
What's the most What's the most shows you've done in like a, like in one, like 24 hours? Because you get those, like New Year's Eve is like always a wild one where you like generally do like three shows in one night.
I don't know. I've been trying to stop for years situations where I do a gig and then have, and then the way it works out is there's no time to sleep before the gig because of the time you got then, because of the travel from the airport to the hotel to the club could be from the city to the airport might be hours. I've been trying to stop the last few years, ones where you land, you don't have any sleep, you do the gig, and then you have to travel with no sleep to the airport to travel all day to go into another gig.
Yeah.
And so even if you're sober, that's hard because you're literally not sleeping apart from a little bit in the car or on the flight. And like I've been trying to organise my tours better to not have those situations. But now and again, this still happened because plans change and stuff. And it was like, oh, that gig got rearranged there.
Yeah.
Or you agreed to do that and you didn't realise about the routing. Or a lot of the time, like you playing for someone, but they have to rearrange to that date, but you've already got such and such either side, and it's too good a gig not to do. But those ones can't be heavy, and I can't remember. But there's been a lot of occasions where like I've just been like a zombie run rabbit. I think one of the May Bank holiday is always quite a mad one, because doing like, I think I did like gigs on the Friday, Saturday, Sunday in Europe. And then one of them, it was straight from the gig to the airport to fly to Detroit. And I remember that one, I was like, I had some sleep on the flight to Detroit, but a lot of the time it can be really bad sleep, really.
Yeah.
I remember being on that flight and I was like, I'm 100% when I get there going to do the gig, because it's one of those ones where you had to go straight to do the gig, doing the gig, and then I'm going back to the hotel and going to sleep. And then Jamie Jones was on the flight, and he was like, oh, do you want to come out with us? And I ended up that going out the window. So after doing this intense weekend in Europe, I ended up going like on one in there, but that can happen. But I think the most intense period has been every year for me, for the last few years, has been where you do Sonar Festival in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And that can be sometimes a few gigs because it's on all week. So you could do like two or three days in a row, say three nights in a row in Barcelona. And often my mates come to stuff like that and it has got out of hand over the years. So you do Sonar. That'll be like, that's the mad thing about being a DJ, right? When your mates come, it's their holiday.
Dangerous.
So they're going all out on their holiday, right? So I'll get involved because it's their holiday. But then their holiday will be over. But then from Sonar, I will go into Glastonbury.
Oh, damn.
And then it'll be 4 days. It'll be straight into Glastonbury from Sonar. I think that's the way around it goes, or is it the other way around? And then it'll be a different group of mates there, and Glastonbury's their holiday, and they're having a big one. So I'll get involved with them there. And then it was like, oh, after Glastonbury, fly straight to Croatia for Hideout.
Yeah.
And then you have to do that gig, which is a really long travel, and then fly to Ibiza for Paradise opening party, and that stretch happened they fall on the same dates every year.
Yeah.
And I used to do that, obviously enjoyed, have the time of my life with my mates, but then I would be absolutely dead. And things like that are what made us go sober, because doing runs like that and getting involved is just a nightmare on your body. It's hard enough sober, and it's much more enjoyable sober.
Yeah. What's Glastonbury like? Because I live 15 minutes away from the festival, and I've been there so many times as a kid with my dad, but I've never played. Is it something special?
Have you ever attended the
festival?
Yeah,
I went. It's 15. Oh, it's like 15 minutes from my house. I've been loads of times when I was a kid.
Oh, right. I thought you meant just to the area, but no, you've actually been at the festival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, right. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. Like, I'd say, like, Rainbow Serpent was the most fun I've ever had DJing at a festival. Glastonbury last year, I went every time I've done Glastonbury now 4 or 5 years, I think. And it's always the highlight of the year for me. And yeah. A lot of my friends go, and I'll most times I go to a festival, I'll just go in and out for my set, turn up, leave, and don't stay.
Yeah.
But Glastonbury, I always book that off and go for the full thing for 4 nights, and often take a lot of gigs, maybe 3 or 4 gigs throughout the 4 days,
yeah.
or sometimes more, I think. Go and experience the festival, see all the bands, see all of the DJs. Actually, I think that was the last time I was raving to DJs, was at Glastonbury. Carl Cox's set during the day with all my mates. That was amazing. NYC Down Low. So that weekend was the most fun I've ever had in my life.
I bet.
Doing anything. Like, yeah. As a kid, anything, like, that is the best party in the world. And I've done Burning Man now because I heard Burning Man. Some people say Burning Man's better than Glastonbury. So I did Burning Man last year as well and got involved there. And it was amazing, mind-blowing. But for me, Glastonbury is still, it's un-fucking real. It's the best one, and you should go and do it because, for me, it's the pinnacle.
Dude, I would play there tomorrow. I just got to get booked. When I get booked, I'm there, man. It's been a huge part of my life growing up. Massive part of my life growing up. I've seen,
mate.
One of the reasons why I DJ is because of Glastonbury.
Yeah.
And the day I play, I can't wait, man. I really,
mate, man, you'll love it. And if you can get some time off to stay a couple nights and experience it, because it's got so many stages and mad little labyrinth rooms and everything. I think it's got like about 100 different arenas, basically. Yeah. And they're not all like your typical big stage, like all different things. And like the rabbit hole's a cool place. And
it's mad, the amount of people that go. It's like 250,000 over the weekend.
Amazing. And there's this place called NYC Down Low. Have you heard of it?
Yeah.
And to me, it's a nightclub that inside Glastonbury, and it's done like an old New York tenement block from this. I can't remember exactly what year it is.
From the 80s.
Yeah, it's like a old kind of disco vibes inside, and it's just so pure that it's like going back to the heyday of like clubbing, and you feel like you're transported in a time warp back. And
they do this amazing front on it, don't they? They put like a million. It's
so good. And like that to me, the last year I went there every night till it closed at 6 a.m. And I think it's the best nightclub in the world. Seriously. And it's inside of Glastonbury. And it's the best nightclub in the world. And it would be an absolute, I played in Glastonbury, lots of different areas, but never there. Like that would be unreal. It's so good. But then I feel like Glastonbury has a few of the best nightclubs in the world.
Yeah.
The Temple, where I've played a few times. That to me, if that was a club, it's like open air club though, but walled, that would be one of the best clubs in the world. It's, honestly, it's so good.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's just a...
It's a different level.
It's different, but it's been going on since like the 60s. So you can't like, kind of like when something's been going on for that long, it has the chance to mature into what it is. Whereas I think a lot of the festivals nowadays is like a pop-up, book your biggest DJs, not really worry about the production and just kind of try and sell some tickets. Glastonbury really does feel like it's got like a history behind it.
Yeah, because I think it's not a commercial thing. I don't think it's for profit, and it gives all of its things to charity. So it's an arts thing, and that really comes across. You can see, and that's what Burning Man's like as well. And I think that when it's not done for a profit, that comes across. You can tell.
I still haven't done Burning Man. I nearly went last year. I nearly got persuaded. I'm not sold on it yet. But did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had an amazing time. It was absolutely amazing. It was that was pretty wild as well. That was a whole let's just say it was one of the best and worst experiences of my life.
Did you dress up like Mad Max?
Yeah, we got fully amongst it. It was amazing, but like we ended up skitzing and leaving like 2 days early, man, before the man even got burned or anything. We're in a bad way, and it was really, really cool though. I feel like I've got unfinished business, and I would love to go back. Hopefully I'll get a chance to go back there.
I'm sure you will, man. I'm sure you will. Dude, we've just done an hour and a half.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's gone quick. Let's wrap it up. Thank you for coming on. Really appreciate it. Also huge love for releasing the record. It's I'm happy that you guys kind of had it, and it's kind of got a home with you guys. It's just great to be part of it.
Amazing, man. Thanks for putting it out with us.
No worries, man. Anytime. Before we go, let's do the promo bit. How can people follow you on social media and the record label? What is it?
Yeah, so on Instagram, it's Trick Label, and on Twitter, it's Trick Label, and then my Instagram, SoundCloud stuff, just Patrick Topman.
Easy as that. Keep safe, man. Hopefully see you next year at some point at a rave or somewhere. Who knows? Yeah, big love. Thank you, man.
Yeah, cheers, man. It's been good to speak to you, and hopefully see you soon.
Nice one. And that is a wrap. Hope you enjoyed that one. I definitely did. I would love it if you could hit subscribe if you're on YouTube, or if you are listening on iTunes or Apple or whatever. iTunes and Apple is exactly the same thing. I meant Spotify. Hit subscribe. Give us a little review. Send it to your friends if you think they would enjoy the conversations. If you want anybody else on there, slide into my DMs on the old social media, and I will try and get those people on the show as well. Keep safe, and I'll see you next time. Big love.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.